This is Janelle Yates, Senior Editor of OBG Management. Since initial publication of findings from the estrogen progestin arm of the Women's Health Initiative in 2002, counseling patients about hormone therapy became a lot more complicated. Women are understandably cautious about initiating or continuing estrogen therapy without a clear understanding of the risks and benefits in their particular case. In this audio cast, Dr. Andrew Kaunitz lays out his approach to this important conversation. Dr. Kaunitz is professor and associate chairman of the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at the University of Florida College of Medicine in Jacksonville, Florida. He serves on the OBG Management Board of Editors. Dr. Kaunitz, when you counsel menopausal women who are thinking about starting hormone therapy or trying to decide whether to continue it, what benefits do you tell them about?
Janelle, I emphasize treatment of hot flashes. Far and away, the great majority of patients in my practice who initiate hormone therapy do it specifically for the treatment of hot flashes. However, I also emphasize the benefit of osteoporosis prevention, as well as prevention and treatment of symptomatic genital atrophy.
Is there an ideal age range for use of hormone therapy?
Yes, I think we have a very clear perspective from Women's Health Initiative and other published reports that symptomatic women in their 50s or within one decade of the onset of menopause, in this group of what we can call younger menopausal women, the benefits of hormone therapy outweigh their risks for many symptomatic women. For instance, we recognize that when younger menopausal women, that is women in their 50s or within 10 years of the onset of menopause, initiate hormone therapy for the treatment of hot flashes, they do so without raising their risk of coronary heart events. This is very different than the impression left by the overall Women's Health Initiative findings first published in the summer of 2002, which left the impression that women who used estrogen progestin hormone therapy increased their risk of coronary heart disease. We recognize now that when we focus on the most clinically relevant group, which is to say younger menopausal women, the group most likely to come to us seeking treatment of bothersome hot flashes, use of hormone therapy, whether it be combination estrogen progestin therapy or estrogen only therapy in women without a uterus, is safe from a cardiovascular perspective.
What major risks is hormone therapy associated with?
When we are referring to use of estrogen progestin therapy in a menopausal woman with an intact uterus, I discuss that long-term use for more than 3 to 5 years of combination therapy is associated with a small increased risk of breast cancer. I emphasize that this is a small increased risk, not a large increased risk. And I'll often point out that, for instance, the link between cigarette smoking and lung cancer represents a very large increased risk, whereas the link between hormone therapy, estrogen progestin, combination hormone therapy, and breast cancer, While it represents a well-documented increased risk, this is a small or modest increased risk. Similar, for instance, to the small increased risk of breast cancer associated with moderate alcohol intake. A second risk, Janelle, associated with use of hormone therapy relates to the elevated risk of venous thromboembolism, or VTE, associated with use of oral hormone therapy. So if a patient in my practice prefers to use oral hormone therapy, whether it be estrogen-only therapy after hysterectomy or oral estrogen progestin therapy, I'll point out that there is an increased risk of blood clot or venous thromboembolism, whether it be DVT or pulmonary embolism. I think this elevated risk is particularly applicable to women who have an intrinsic higher risk of VTE, and this would be, in my practice, particularly high BMI or obese women. So in general in my practice, but particularly for high-risk women, particularly those who are obese, I try to steer my patients preferentially towards transdermal therapy because, from my perspective, patch estrogen therapy does not appear to increase the risk of thromboembolism. If I have a patient, particularly an overweight patient, who prefers to use oral therapy, and there certainly are reasons why women may prefer oral therapy, often it's less expensive, and some of my patients certainly prefer tablets to patches. In that case, I will point out that oral estrogen therapy is associated with a higher risk of blood clot than is transdermal or patch therapy.
Are there specific types of patients you would try to discourage from using hormone therapy?
There are. Occasionally, I'll see women with a history of a documented blood clot, including pulmonary embolism, with bothersome menopausal symptoms. And in such women, I do try to discourage use of hormone therapy. And if patients are adamant and understand that there may be an elevated risk of recurrent thrombosis, I would certainly prefer transdermal to oral estrogen therapy in this setting. And I would also prefer using low doses, for instance, 0.05 or a lower dose. From time to time, I see women who've been treated successfully for breast cancer presenting with bothersome menopausal symptoms such as hot flashes or uncomfortable symptoms of genital atrophy. I'll point out to such women that we have only limited data which assesses the safety of hormone therapy for breast cancer survivors. And in my experience, most women who've been treated for breast cancer and most oncologists in the setting are not comfortable with the idea of starting systemic hormone therapy to treat, for instance, hot flashes. However, I do have a number of patients who are breast cancer survivors in my practice with very bothersome genital atrophy causing sexual and sexual dysfunction and often marital concerns. I'll explain to such women that use of vaginal estrogen is off-label. I cannot guarantee that it won't increase the risk of breast cancer recurrence. But in my practice, after such counseling, I do have a number of very symptomatic patients who, with good informed consent, choose to initiate and continue vaginal estrogen therapy.
In women who still have a uterus and who opt to try hormone therapy, how do you go about choosing a progestin?
When I'm prescribing combination estrogen-progestin therapy, Janelle, in my practice, I do have some preference for using micronized oral progesterone, and the dose I use is 100 milligram capsules nightly, or QHS. These capsules are formulated with peanut oil and should not be used in women with allergies to peanuts. Micronized progesterone orally can cause some sleepiness, so it should be these capsules should only be taken at night at bedtime. And many of my patients welcome the fact that these tablets may make them somewhat drowsy at bedtime. The reason I prefer progesterone is that there is some epidemiologic data from France suggesting safety advantages with micronized progesterone versus other progestins with respect to the outcome breast cancer. However, I also use other progestins in my practice, and from a cost perspective, medroxyprogesterone acetate certainly is a very cost-effective approach to oral progestational therapy for endometrial suppression. And the dose I would recommend in women using conventional doses of estrogen would be MPA 2.5 milligram tablets daily.
Would you make the same overall recommendations if the patient were perimenopausal as opposed to postmenopausal?
Janelle, perimenopause, that transition time, which may last 5 years or so prior to the final menses, is often associated with irregular, sometimes bothersome bleeding, and also often by vasomotor symptoms, which themselves may be bothersome to patients, particularly if they are interfering with sleep. But when we treat symptoms in perimenopausal women, we need to keep in mind that by definition, women prior to menopause, perimenopausal women are still ovulatory, although they do not ovulate as predictably or consistently as as younger women. So hormonal management of perimenopausal symptoms needs to be performed with a regimen with a sufficient dose of progestin to suppress ovulation consistently. So when I'm treating perimenopausal symptoms, I'm not using micronized progesterone and I'm not using medroxyprogesterone acetate. I prefer in that setting hormone formulations, estrogen progestin formulations with birth control type progestins. For instance, formulations with ethinyl estradiol, 5 micrograms, and 1 milligram of norethindrome acetate. This is available as a branded formulation, FemHRT1/5, and also available in generic formulations. Another appropriate formulation in treating perimenopausal women would be estradiol 1 milligram, that's 17 beta estradiol 1 milligram, and 0.5 milligrams of norethindrome acetate, available as Activella or generics. And these combination oral estrogen progestin formulations suppress ovulation, contain estrogen to treat hot flashes, and will often result in symptomatic perimenopausal women becoming amenorrheic and with very good symptom relief in terms of hot flashes. So these would be my go-to formulations for perimenopausal women.
Is there anything else you think is important about counseling a patient about or prescribing hormone therapy?
You know, since 2002, with the initial publications in the Journal of the American Medical Association, or JAMA, in the summer of 2002, so many women and so many OBGYNs and other clinicians have been terrified of using or prescribing hormone therapy. And I think the pendulum is continuing to swing to a more moderate perspective here. I think we recognize that for young menopausal women, as we've discussed during this phone call, for women in their 50s or within one decade of the onset of menopause, symptomatic women in many cases can be safely treated with hormone therapy, whether it be combination therapy for women with an intact uterus or estrogen-only therapy post-hysterectomy. Likewise, for women who do not have a uterus and are using estrogen therapy, such women should be reassured there is no increased risk of breast cancer, and the best available data, in fact, demonstrates a reduced risk of breast cancer, and for that matter, reduced mortality from breast cancer. We also recognize that for women who are young menopausal women and being treated for symptoms, hormone therapy does not increase the risk of coronary heart disease. And particularly in the case of estrogen-only therapy, we see in young menopausal women a reduced risk of coronary heart disease. This is a much more reassuring perspective than first came out in 2002. And so I think there have been millions of women with bothersome menopausal symptoms who have unnecessarily avoided hormone therapy. And I think the perspective we have now is that hormone therapy, for appropriate candidates, as we've discussed during this phone call, many women can safely and with quite a bit of reassurance use hormone therapy to treat their symptoms, also to prevent osteoporosis.
Thank you, Dr. Kaunitz.
Thank you, Janelle. I'm glad we've had an opportunity to talk about this important topic.